Hi, everybody, and welcome to Josh Nason's Punch-Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. Friday, November 19th, as I'm recording this intro. Hope you guys are doing well. Thanksgiving coming up next week. Christmas, Hanukkah, all that stuff after that. Coming to the end of a very interesting 2021, and we're going to start commemorating the year that was with my very first ever look back at the year in professional wrestling. This is going to be a 12-part series, everyone. Buckle up. As other podcasters and radio hosts say, 12 episodes coming at you over the next, I would say, 2 months, maybe a month and a half. This is going to be in tandem with my the Year in Review MMA series as well. So two separate things, so 16 podcasts coming up over the next couple of months as we look back the year that was 2021. The reason I wanted to do this, as I've talked about before, is so much shit happens in pro wrestling now. All these different organizations, all these different moves, all these different interesting things happening. So I want to kind of document it all, look back and some of the crazy things that we forgot. So we're going to kick off this 16-episode series with January, and we're going to talk about the year that was in pro wrestling in January with Wrestling Observer editor and first-time guest Ethan Renner. And I'm just going to kick it over to the interview right now because a lot of good stuff here. An hour of power coming your way. Let's do it. I can't believe I just said hour of power. Again, what am I, some sort of hack radio host? Come on. Ethan Renner, January, pro wrestling, you and I, let's go. Well, the year end is coming, everyone, if everyone didn't know it. Mid-November right now. Things are getting cold, depending on where you live in the world. Thanksgiving coming up. Christmas, Hanukkah, New Year's Day, WWE, all that stuff coming up over the next couple months. So we're going to look back at the year that was. We're going to start doing that now because there was so much that happened. And for the first time, I'm going to do a look back at the year in pro wrestling and helping me kick off this journey, a first-time guest. Someone I've known for a long time, but actually right before this call, we actually talked like real people for the very first time. He's a editor for this here website, WrestlingObserver.com. He's also the biggest Frasier fan I know, hosts what we call Frasier Observer Radio. We'll talk about that podcast in a bit, and does all kinds of other stuff as well. Ethan Renner is here. And Ethan, last night I was thinking about how to intro this, and I was thinking about actually singing part of the Frasier song, and I just realized I completely forgot.
Well, baby, I hear the blues of calling, tossed salads, and scrambled eggs.
That's actually the line I was thinking of. It's like, what is that line? Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm not joshing, as the kids might say, or as you might say. But what? So you actually do host a Frasier podcast?
Well, it's actually a pro wrestling podcast, and then in the post show credits, we discuss Frasier. It's like a bonus features deal. So I've been doing a pro wrestling podcast for 7 years, and it somehow evolved into I blabber on about Frasier after the show ends, and we record it.
See, that's a good thing. I this whole time, perhaps I missed the first part, but I thought I always thought it was just a Frasier, like a Frasier, and that seemed completely normal because so many people have podcasts now that focus on like a niche subject. But this is so Frasier's a passion project or a passion of yours.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So I ended up kind of starting and writing, doing TV reviews. And so, yeah, I discovered Frasier on the Hallmark Channel with commercials as God intended, rather than watching on, you know, a streaming service. And yeah, you know, now that I'm talking about this out loud for like the first time, a Frasier podcast would make much more sense than like the 3 millionth wrestling podcast. But I didn't know that 7 years ago. So
yeah. Well, I mean, who knows? You could do it, what the kids call on TV, a spinoff, right?
Yeah, sounds right. Sounds good.
Just break it off. Yeah, that'd be interesting. So Frasier, for those people that don't know, like, what in the hell is Frasier? For some reason, if they don't know. So Frasier was a character on a very popular NBC sitcom called Cheers. Yeah, I believe the archives of that. You watch it, I believe, on Netflix, and I don't know if Peacock or not, but
it's I'm doing my first Cheers rewatch right now. It's on Peacock. Yeah.
Got it. That would make sense, yeah, because it was on NBC forever. And Frasier, same thing on Peacock?
I think that one's on Hulu for some reason.
Gotcha. That makes sense. That makes sense. So Frasier, Dr. Frasier Crane was a character on Cheers for a very long time. And then once that show wrapped, it got spun off into his own show where he was a talk radio host. I'm doing this all from memory. He was a talk radio host in Seattle, lived with his dad. And there was the British woman, right? It was a caretaker of his dad, right?
Correct.
And then his brother Niles also lived there as well. This amazing apartment, which had a spectacular view. I remember that the balcony level. I think you might be able to see the Space Needle, and it was pretty. And of course, the dog Eddie.
Yes, played by Moose and later Moose's son.
Gotcha.
That was the name of the Jack Russell Terrier that played Eddie. Yeah,
interesting stuff. So you want to check that out, and also prompt Ethan to do a spinoff of Frasier Observer Radio, which is the name I think is perfect as well.
Yeah,
certainly hit him up. We'll talk about that. So let's get to kind of the main event of what we're talking about. So again, this is the first time I've done this for pro wrestling. How I usually do it for MMA, because there's really, you know, one major organization that takes up 98% of the oxygen in the room when it comes to events, news, things like that. I usually kind of go month by month, and we can do a quarter at a time. I looked into doing this, and it is there's way too much wrestling stuff. So here's what I kind of did. I broke it up by the major organizations, and so we'll kind of run through some of the major, you know, items of that month, news items, results, whatever, and then kind of go through there. We'll hit up a few of these things. There are going to be a lot of things I missed, and I say this because, like, every single title match I did not get on here. I mean, this could take like hours if we're talking about every title defense of like Raw, or there's going to be certain things that may have caught the wrestling zeitgeist, so to speak. Like I was thinking, I can't remember if it was this year. Nia Jax, my whole thing, was that this year or last year?
I feel like that was this year.
Okay, so I don't know when that happened. I don't know if I'm going to get that, because I read through all these different headlines on our website and things like that, but I mean, there's just so much stuff that happens. So just kind of keep this in mind. These are kind of the bigger rocks, and there's going to be a few things along the way. So don't kill me after. So let's get into, so this is January. So this episode will be January, and then we'll do, down the road, I guess, February, March, and so on. So we'll start with January, and we'll start with WWE. And I think, you know, there are two things that really kind of stood out to me about this month in terms of like news and interesting stuff. One was the Royal Rumble, which we'll get into in a second. But first, WWE getting more money. And this was announced that NBC Universal was acquiring the rights for the WWE network here in the States. 5 years, just over $1 billion, give or take. Another $1 billion deal between to begin with for WWE, but also NBC Universal is giving them even more money to bring this onto Peacock, which they obviously wanted to launch and make a big thing, and essentially buying subscribers from another entertainment source, and one that they've known forever and worked with ever in WWE. And this affected the game in a lot of ways. One, the transition as we kind of sit here, hindsight being 2020, is that, you know, the it's been a pain in the ass for a lot of people. The ability to how people watch, the ability to rewind, jump in, pause, just all these little things. That's been a big thing. The amount of content being ported over has been a big thing, or lack thereof. Some of the shows not making their way over because they may have depicted blackface and things like that. And that's kind of a complicated issue to tackle in a lot of different ways. But it's, you know, we have, again, the benefit of hindsight almost a year later, but this was another big thing in that WWE Network, kind of the service that a lot of people took for granted and how easy it was to use, was going to go somewhere else here in the States.
I miss the network here in the States. Peacock has been, as you eloquently put it, a pain in the ass. I did not even see this one coming. Like, I remember talk probably, maybe in 2020, maybe 2019, I don't actually remember. Vince McMahon was very much, we might be selling our pay-per-views to a streaming service. And I just, for whatever reason, I didn't see this coming. And then it's just like, well, they just got $1 billion for stuff they already produce. And they get seen by more people, theoretically. If you're an Xfinity or a Comcast subscriber here in the United States, you have some version of Peacock. That's a big portion of the country. It's a big deal.
Yeah, so great point there. So the amount of paying subscribers, and they didn't really kind of break this out, but for those of us that are, Xfinity, Comcast, or I think it was Charter or Cox, or maybe all three of those, that, essentially we get a version of Peacock for free. Peacock, the service would otherwise be like $5 a month, I think, or maybe that's Peacock Premium or something along those lines. Oh, yeah, it is Peacock Premium. It's like $5, and then there's the $10 or whatever.
Right.
And, and for most of us, you don't have to pay for it. If you have a set-top box, you don't have to pay for it. I get a box through – all I have is internet through Xfinity, and I was able to get just kind of one of those like basic boxes that they give away for free if you have internet, and I'm able to get it on there. So there's so many people that converted that were paying $10 a month and then all of a sudden went to $0 a month if they were able to figure all that out. It's it's been kind of a weird transition. I think the things that kind of bug people the most are, if I get into an event, let me rewind. Let me be able to have control of it like they had before. Right. And that doesn't happen now. And it's not really conducive to how people watch things now. People want to have control over what they watch and how they watch it. And they don't have that right now.
Yeah, that part is it's definitely not a very user-friendly streaming service. If you're a Premier League soccer fan, Peacock is NBC Universal has put a lot of games on Peacock, and the streaming service often breaks, and you can't watch live games that way. It's not a user-friendly live viewing experience. They put ads during entrances, during some pay-per-views. like it's hard to, you mentioned if you don't pay for the premium service, you still have some version of it. And so they're trying to work their ads in there somewhere. And I guess they figured it, well, entrances are a good spot for it. I don't know that there is a good spot during a WWE show to run ads. So yeah.
I would agree. Let's see. Next, kind of the other big item of the month to me, there's Royal Rumble. Edge and Bianca Belair winning their respective Royal Rumbles and moving on to WrestleMania to challenge for whatever title that they chose. And we'll obviously talk about how that turned out in future episodes. Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler winning the women's tag team titles. Christian, Naomi, Seth Rollins, Naomi twice. Christian, Naomi, Rollins, Lana, Rhea Ripley, and Damian Priest either appearing, reappearing, debuting in the Royal Rumbles, and that was interesting. Drew McIntyre retaining the WWE title over Goldberg. That was a decision that was made over a early January weekend, early in the month, and that was kind of an interesting news item throughout the month in terms of long-term planning and so on, or lack thereof. And then Roman Reigns defending the Universal title with a win over Kevin Owens. And obviously, the Christian thing is interesting. Again, we'll talk about that in a future episode because it didn't last that long. He ended up in a different organization altogether. And you had Rhea Ripley and Damian Priest, who played some interesting roles here throughout the year. And then, this is kind of the beginning of the coronation for Bianca Belair, at least we thought at that point. And then Edge, this veteran coming back, grizzled veteran, coming back in a match again with Christian, which is kind of a fun side note there. But it was kind of the bookends, right? The old and the new, moving on to title matches at WrestleMania.
I really think WWE did a very good job for the first 8 months of this year with Bianca Belair. They did everything right. They picked a new star. They had her win a bunch. They let her have cool matches and do cool moves. And then they just kind of squashed her at SummerSlam for Becky Lynch, and I'm a huge Becky Lynch fan, so I don't have a if you want to put Becky Lynch over Bianca Belair, maybe there's a way to do that that doesn't involve killing dead the momentum that you spent 8 months building for Bianca. But I thought it was a rare W for WWE creative the way they handled Bianca Belair for the first 8 months of this year, And then Edge is a weird one. This whole run has been weird. Obviously, he's been like interrupted by injuries, and he's a part-timer, but he's not a part-timer, and he's in and out, and he doesn't win a lot of matches. I'm definitely much more positive on everything WWE did for the first 8 months of this year with Bianca Belair than they did with Edge, who ended up, I don't know, I don't think there was ever really a hope that he was going to beat Roman Reigns for the Universal title at WrestleMania or anything like that, but he kind of ended up overexposed on WWE TV this year, and he's more than a nostalgia act, but he's not like a full-fledged main eventer. His whole run here has been weird.
Yeah, it's basically like a piece of, essentially is how they look at it, a piece of intellectual property that they pull out of the toy chest when they need it, but they don't really have a plan for what to do when they have it. It's kind of like with Goldberg, on the same show, losing to Drew McIntyre again. That match just came together within like a couple weeks before the show. And it's this weird, like, it's just something that I think a lot of WWE fans accept as this is how it's going to be. You know, Cena came back. We'll talk about that in a minute, but these guys that they can just kind of pull out and plug and play for a month, and then they just put them back. And it's not really a case where they leave, leave it better than when they found it, I guess, is one way of putting it. It's not like there's you're not like putting over Drew McIntyre that much more if you get a win over Goldberg, or if, with Edge losing or so. I think as a wrestling fan, you kind of think of it the effect of, oh, they're going to help kind of elevate the newer talent. But when these guys kind of parachute in and parachute out, and you know they're going to come back at some point, just that to me, that effect is kind of lost.
Yeah, 1,000%. And Goldberg, guy's 54 years old. What do you expect from the guy? He had about as good a 5-minute match as you can have, at Royal Rumble. He and Drew was a fine 5-minute match, but everybody knows Goldberg's going to come back and he's going to do a job. I mean, that didn't happen later this year at Crown Jewel. He actually went over Bobby Lashley, but, he's going to do a couple matches a year. He's probably going to lose. Mm-hmm. That's just how it goes.
Yeah. Well, let's go over the, one quick thing before we move on from that. Christian's return was great. He looked great. It was a big surprise, obviously. And it was a big story afterward. And that was kind of one of the feel good moments of this first part of the year. And it was, there was all types of questions that came out of this, like how did he come back after what 8 years or whatever it was that he was gone? Obviously the concussion thing, we saw Daniel Bryan come back after a career that we thought was over due to head injuries and so on. And this, it really, again, it kind of set up a very interesting situation in which he was able to get a full-time job with AEW. And it was kind of a fascinating year for Christian Arnold. And this really kicked it off.
Yeah, that was another one that I totally did not see coming. I don't think anything leaked about Christian beforehand. They brought him back in 2020 to pop a TV rating, doing an unsanctioned match against Randy Orton.
Yep.
And he was kind of humiliated, as they tend to do with their legends. Mm-hmm. He was humiliated. So it was nice that he at least got to kind of write the end of his own WWE story, if he cares about that. But yeah, he parlayed it into a full-time job with another company, which I also didn't see coming. So it's always nice to be surprised. And that was definitely, it was a surprising start and end to the year for Christian.
Let's go over this first section of WWE news. And if there's anything on here that sticks out to you after I finish, I'll kick it over to you. So a couple of this group of headlines. So Sonya Deville returned to WWE for the first time since August. So that was interesting. Obviously, she had taken some time off after the house invasion and everything. It kind of just played out of that, just terrible situation. Like I mentioned, the Goldberg McIntyre match decision was made over early January weekend. Mentioned Edge was returning again for the Rumble. The first ever Women's Dusty Tag Team Classic was announced for NXT. So I should mention, WWE, this section will include NXT stuff as well. NXT announced TakeOver for Valentine's Day. We learned that before the Rumble that Ripley and Priest were going to be called up to WWE at some point. It was imminent. Daniel Bryan said he was pushing for more NXT talent to be on SmackDown. Dolph Ziggler and Bobby Roode won the SmackDown Tag Team titles. Vince McMahon countersued Oliver Luck in the ongoing XFL lawsuit, will never die. WWE announced their Superstar Spectacle, the first one for India, the India market, rather, and that Drew McIntyre and Jinder Mahal were going to return on that show. Drew had been out with an injury at that point, I believe. Speaking of things that won't die, this feud between Randy Orton, The Fiend, and Alexa Bliss. Mm-hmm. This was just in our Slack chat, I would always enjoy the conversation with Joe, you and Brian Rose, because you guys primarily watch Raw, just this complete shit show with this angle. This month, a fireball was thrown into Randy Orton's face, and that was by Alexa Bliss, and that was the cause of much laughter and head scratching and all that stuff. Kofi Kingston had this weird jaw injury that kept him out, and it was like a kind of a weird story around it. It just was gone. It was just odd how it was that whole thing played out. NXT said there or didn't say, but it was learned that they were going to move to live fan reactions for their Thunderdome setup inside the Capitol Wrestling Center instead of taped, which I had no idea they were doing tape reactions. They're just basically copying the stuff from Raw or SmackDown and just playing it in NXT. So it just shows you the boy, what a year for NXT. And also the Rascals debuted on NXT former Rascals in Impact, and that was good. And they've had their own interesting year in a lot of different ways. Anything in that first section of news stand out to you?
I would be remiss if I didn't mention, Randy Orton being burnt to, or The Fiend being burnt to a crisp. I think that was the phrase that Brian Alvarez used over and over and over again to describe the Randy Orton and The Fiend feud that ultimately ended at WrestleMania. But that was memorable for just how bad it was. And I don't really know that I have a whole lot to add on anything else there. I think that everything else speaks for it. I am a little bit, we've been hearing about WWE wanting to break in. Well, every corporation always talks about how they want to, the great potential of India and China as markets to break into. And it's always the thing where everyone wants to break into the market. They can't figure out how to take money out of the market. And so we get weird one-offs like the Superstar Spectacle this year or the Jinder Mahal title push, in 3 or 4 years ago. But we never go like full bore into India or China. And I'm still kind of waiting for some major corporate entity in North America to figure out how to extract money from either of those countries.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like they've been able to do it in some forms, but it's same thing. I mean, we've talked about forever UFC and, last year, Weili Zhang kind of breaking through with her, she picked up her first title, I think by a China born athlete. And that was big, but it's just, they brought over talents, for the Performance Center. We'll see how that kind of develops in the future. I assume it'll probably stay the same, but I think one of the things is they haven't been able to develop enough talent and really get behind the talent, like from India or China, that would, that in a sustained way that I guess the regular WWE fans kind of like take to them. You know what I mean?
Right.
They're not like, they have like Mansoor, for example. Talking about talent, trying to, not expose a region, but kind of gain more traction in a region. But it's not like they're pushing him to a WWE championship or anything like that. They kind of bring people in from these different that they think are going to appeal to these different regions, but they do it like to your point, they half-ass it and they don't really get behind it. Then they drop the idea and it's like, well, how are you going to try to get goal one and when you're not going to kind of do the things it takes to achieve those goals?
Yeah.
Second section here, Shea Samuel signed with NXT UK and made his debut. Sari announced she was going to start with NXT and that she was moving to the U.S. from Japan. WWE Fastlane, who's announced that is going to be returning in March. Bad Bunny, Ethan. Bad Bunny, the controversial subject matter around Wrestling Observer Twitter, I guess, between Dave and Ryan Satin. Announced he was going to perform at the Royal Rumble. My God, what a year that would turn out to be with him. Rod McMahon, Vince's brother, dying at 77 years old. WrestleMania moved. It was announced it was going to move to April 11th and was going to be set for two nights. And next three locations were announced for fans. So obviously this is the, I want to say post-pandemic, but kind of the post-2020 shit show. It was announced it was going to be two nights, and it kind of they reset the deck a bit for where it's going to be. And obviously Dallas coming up in 2022. AQA and Anthony Henry signed with WWE back when they were actually signing indie talent. We'll get to more of that in a bit. Maiko Satomura signed with WWE, and she was essentially going to be a player coach, so to speak, in NXT UK. WWE announced that their animated movie Rumble with Netflix is going to be pushed to 2022. And two other names, NBC announced they were going to be moving their sports programming to USA Network. Initially, they didn't think there was going to be any problem, but as we learned later in the year, that would change the face of everything, especially for NXT, and that we learned that John Cena was planning to make an appearance at WrestleMania. Anything on those items?
Bad Bunny. Bad Bunny. In another era, Bad Bunny would, you know, the 1980s, the MTV WWF connection. Bad Bunny would have been a huge deal in another era. And then just because of how many more media choices there are 35 years later, however many, how fractured kind of the entertainment landscape is, Bad Bunny ended up, I don't think, not being a major deal for WWE at all. And it's just like the guy came in, he worked hard. He's a legitimate star. Like he's on, you know, turn on any sporting event in the United States, you'll see a commercial with Bad Bunny selling beer or headphones or whatever. Like he's a big star in another era. I think Bad Bunny would have been a much bigger deal. I don't think he ended up being. And obviously, rest in peace, Rod McMahon. Rod, I always think of, I started subscribing to The Observer in 2007 around the time of the Benoit story, and obviously Rod McMahon was going to make his one and only WWE appearance for Vince's funeral at the Benoit, what ended up being the Benoit tribute show. And obviously he did not make his WWE debut. So I always think of that weird connection with Rod and the Benoit story. But yeah, Bad Bunny feels like it would have been a much bigger deal 30 years ago, and it was not.
Yeah, I think it depends on what their goals were with it. If they were trying to attract just young people, if they were trying to attract young Latinos, or if they're trying to go after a key demo, you know, if they're trying to go after something like that, you know, who knows?
Right.
Demos it seems to be anything that matters now. It's talked about, yeah. Right? Sure. You know, I guess it just depends. And, you know, they would probably, you'd have to get them on Truth Serum in order to actually get the answer. If it worked, I don't know. I think it's so hard. I think social media impressions that, you know, having used to work in that industry are kind of bullshit, to be honest. You know, it's just like, so if that was, okay. they tout those things and it's not really like, you know, I don't know. It's right. it's hard to say, but they would, it was something to do. And I think that's kind of like the big thing, right? That's how they go about it, we need to fill time. Let's give something to do. We can put some celebrities in here like they're doing now with, you know, NBA players or whatever. I think it's, how do we make this more open so other entertainers and whatever can get into it? But as we'll talk about in future shows, to his credit, he was into it, right? He took in the time and he get in there. So yeah, but that, we'll talk about that more another day. Let's move to because we're paid by them, right? Let's talk to AEW, and not a ton of stuff for them. Obviously, they don't do monthly pay-per-views or anything, so a little bit kind of less news and so on. But here's the stuff I have. I'll just go through this list because, again, it's not a ton. So there was more notes from Brody Lee's passing, obviously, that was in late December, to December 26, if I remember the date right. And there was, in January, there were still more things coming out about it, kind of the fallout of this. The nerves were still raw on this in a lot of ways. Yep. To some extent, you know, they still are, but it was just kind of this like, still like, wow, what I can't believe that happened and how did it happen and all those things. So there's a lot of stuff from that. The Good Brothers made their AEW debut at the first night of New Year's Smash. That was a 2-week event. That was a 2-week event that AEW held over two Dynamites, and they came out saving Kenny Omega from an attack from Jon Moxley. and they aligned with Omega and the Young Bucks, kind of reformed the Elite, and the Elite made their debut. they made their debut on Dynamite, I believe, a week or two after that. Matt and Reba Hardy said they would expect their fourth child. First ever AEW Dynamite Awards announced for the BR app. AEW announced that they were going to be doing a women's eliminator tournament for a title shot involving both held in the United States and Japan. So they were kind of getting around some of the travel issues with hosting kind of essentially two sides of the bracket, one Japan and one the United States. Sting was announced that he was going to return to his first action in since that last match with Rollins at Night of Champions WWE back in the day in a street fight at AEW Revolution. Speaking of Revolution, it was announced it was going to be moving to March 7th for their first ever Sunday pay-per-view to avoid going head-to-head with, I believe, USC or a boxing show, one of the two. Former champion, women's champion Rio was slated to return in February after a long absence. We had the official challenge by Cody Rhodes and Red Velvet for Shaquille O'Neal and Jade Cargill, which we initially thought was going to be at Revolution, ended up changing to a Dynamite show instead. And then Penta El Zero Miedo had to take some time off from AEW because he was dealing with a visa issue. So I guess we'll get into the Good Brothers based on your groan. We've talked about this before. I'm not a fan of those two. I get that they have a dedicated fan base. I guess they kind of have their shtick and everything. I just, from an in-ring standpoint, they don't do anything for me. You've been watching these guys forever because you're more of a New Japan fan than I am, and obviously having covered it for so long and everything. But yeah, I'll let you go on the Good Brothers. Hit it.
Has there ever been a more mediocre duo that, like, every promotion in the world is like, we've got to be in the Good Brothers business? And it's like, As you mentioned, there's shticks, you know, the shtick about, you know, jerking off and stuff. It's funny in a sophomoric way, like the first three times you hear it. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, as Bruce Prichard would say, and then the bell rings. And it's like, have you ever seen a Luke Gallows match that is over like a star in three quarters? Or has Carl Anderson had a good match in the last, decade? It's like these guys came off WWE TV. Yes. But they were jobbers on WWE TV for like 4 years, and every promotion in the world, I guess AEW has kind of backed off some here in the last couple of months as Adam Cole came in. But with that caveat, every promotion in the world has pretty much booked the Good Brothers, and it's just like, really? These guys? Yeah. Anyway, I don't mean to bury them. I don't want heat with Carl Anderson, but good grief, man.
Yeah.
It's just very mediocre duo. And yet they're on Impact, they're on Dynamite, they were New Japan brought them in for shows in the United States. Just like, yeah, I don't get the Good Brothers thing.
Yeah. And yeah, I thought the Sting two things, but stars wise, you know, Sting obviously announced as being returning. We'll talk about that more in a future episode. But I think for Sting heads, that was probably a big deal. I think it was, you know, they kind of knew it was going to be cinematic style, or even with a street fight, they could, you know, cover up some of the things. We obviously didn't even know at that point kind of what we had from a physical standpoint. We'd learn more about that because he had just debuted essentially the month before at Winter is Coming, and that big return. And then, yep. And talk about, you know, other stars, Shaquille O'Neal finally getting into the ring after, you know, that one appearance for WWE in the Andre the Giant Battle Royal. Teaming up with Jade Cargill, who was still at that point, you know, an unknown entity, and Red Velvet to an extent, also an unknown entity, but, you know, Cody Rhodes getting the nod in terms of helping them kind of work through it and so on. He's kind of seems to be the guy for that spot to work with the celebrity or the, you know, essentially, you know, the Anthony Ogogo type, someone very inexperienced that they want to do something with. You know, he tends to be the guy. But, you know, it kind of in retrospect, the Shaq thing was, yeah, it was fun for what it was. It ended weird with the disappearing in the ambulance. And the Sting thing, you know, I tell you, man, I'm really impressed with Sting's year and what they've done with him. I think there was a stretch, as we've joked about before, about, you know, every single week it's Sting speaks on AEW Diamond. He never said anything. Yes. I think it was a case of, does he have, like, every single week it was like, okay, let's get on to kind of what the next thing is going to be. But I think this, I think ever since the street fight thing, I've been impressed at how they've handled him.
They figured out how to use him. They've used him well. I'm not always a fan of the way AEW does angles. I think that's kind of their blind spot as a promotion. It's like the in-ring is always great. And then I'm just generally not a fan of their angles. But I can't complain about a single thing that they've done with Sting. Like the way that he's been used sparingly in the ring, the way that they find the balance of when to use him to like get heat on Darby, and but not so much that he just becomes, oh, here's the old guy to come out and get beat down. I think they've done like a masterful job with Sting and Shaq. Yeah, Shaq's one off. That was he took it seriously once he got out there, which like it, I don't know if you remember some of the build to that match, but he did like on Inside the NBA on TNT or whatever. Mm-hmm. But he it didn't seem like he was going to take it seriously, and then he got out there and he took it seriously. He took a bump off the apron through a table or whatever. It's like he as celebrity forays into wrestling go, Shaq's was a good one.
Yep. Credit to them. I actually put it on free TV, which we'll we'll talk about that when we get to March. We'll flip to Impact, everyone's favorite organization. So a few things, you know, the thing that really stuck out to me this month, news-wise, this was Kenny Omega's in-ring debut for the company. He debuted in a six-man tag alongside the Good Brothers and Hard to Kill, the pay-per-view. Obviously, this was, you know, the first month after the, you know, the Impact angle, as it were, kicked off after Winter Is Coming. He won the title. He and Don Callis took the title Impact and didn't really kind of learn anything. And you know, I talked about this a couple weeks ago. In the podcast I did, it was the whole AEW Impact relationship storyline angle. Was it kind of worth it? Because it's wrapped up at this point. And this was the debut of that. They did, a little better than I think some may have expected. Or, you know, a little bit better than they usually do when it comes to pay-per-views, buys for that. They had a pretty good show for that card, or a pretty good card for that show, rather. They had Moose had to replace Alex Shelley in the main event, so it was Omega and the Good Brothers against Moose, Chris Sabin and Rich Swann. And that was some of the build to the title versus title match. Moose had to replace Alex Shelley because Shelley couldn't make it due to his COVID restrictions with work and all that. Matt Cardona debuted on the show. They announced Rebellion for April, which is the pay-per-view, and Omega's logo was in it, or a Omega symbol was in it, so everyone kind of knew what was going to go on there. This was the pay-per-view that featured the infamous Ethan Page Karate Man fight, which he ripped when he didn't realize it was going to be on the show, or it had been taped back in November. He was done with the company at this point, but he was not happy about this at all. And then Fire and Flavor became the new Knockouts Tag Team Champions. Other news from that month, Sami Callihan signing a multi-year deal with Impact Wrestling. Matt Stryker and D'Lo Brown took over as the commentary team for Impact, which, you know, again, depending on how much you like your ears, that's either good or bad. I've watched some of it. Stryker just for whatever, it just doesn't work for me at all. I thought, as much as people kind of lament Josh Matthews, I think if you're going to take the two, I'd probably rather have Josh Matthews, but you know, some people that may be choice between Poison A and Poison B, right?
sure.
Genesis, which is one of their Impact Plus specials, news out of this, Ace Austin winning the Super X tournament. Jeff Jarrett settled his lawsuit with Anthem, which has been going on for quite some time. Madison Rayne announced her retirement. Insert LOL here because she came back, you know, not too long ago. Private Party, you know, we talked about the Impact AEW relationship. Private Party and Matt Hardy appeared on Impact. Tony Khan appeared on an episode of Impact. And then also Private Party on that same episode earned a Impact Tag Team title shot at February's No Surrender pay-per-view. So we thought that maybe that might be the first of maybe some more crossover type things that never ended up really happening. And then Taya Valkyrie announced that she was done with Impact after her contract was up. And then Trey Miguel announced he was re-signing with Impact, as we talked about with the Rascals signing with NXT or signing with WWE. he ended up staying behind. And, you know, Triple H, I remember he had a comment on a conference call, media call about essentially the Rascals and not signing Trey Miguel, something along those lines. And he talked about having passion and all that. And Trey Miguel kind of took offense to that, which I can understand. And he's had a pretty good impact run ever since. Thoughts on any of that, Ethan?
Yeah, I never understood the impact AEW thing from the AEW side, unless it was, okay, we can send some guys that are green and we can have them go work somewhere that isn't on Dynamite to learn. But as you mentioned there, kind of the guys that ended up in Impact were Private Party, who I already thought, you know, while green, yes, far from the most green talent in AEW. And before Private Party got put with Matt Hardy, Private Party were having bangers on Dynamite every week. And since they've been put with Matt Hardy, they wrestle in slacks and they're in Impact and on Dark and Dark Elevation. And I don't see them on Dynamite or Rampage anymore unless they're out there taking bumps for Matt Hardy. So I don't like the way that pretty much anything about the way the Impact AEW thing turned out. You mentioned Taya Valkyrie there. That was a bizarre story. Like, she's been around. I don't know why 2021 ended up being the year where WWE was finally, yeah, you know what? We're going to sign Taya Valkyrie. And she was kind of one of the last ones in on when, you know, Triple H's talent hoarding or WWE's mindset was still any piece of talent that's available out there, we're going to sign. And she kind of just made it in under the wire. And, you know, if it were, she's since been released. And if it were today, she wouldn't be signed. So kind of bizarre how all of that with Taya Valkyrie worked out, and the AEW Impact thing. Yeah, I never understood it from the AEW side, and the talent that they chose to send to Impact, I didn't agree with the guys that they sent.
Let's flip to Japan, a subject you know very well. Wrestle Kingdom kicked off the year, January 4th, yours truly, his birthday. You always remember that. Send your cards and letters and Amazon things to me. Yes, feel free every January 4th. Two nights, though, January 4th. And I should celebrate my birthday over two nights, too, to align with Wrestle Kingdom every year. Kota Ibushi.
The most stupendous two-night birthday in history.
Exactly. Kota Ibushi defeating Tetsuya Naito to unify the IWGP Heavyweight and Intercontinental titles on night one. Okada defeated Will Ospreay on that show, and the Guerrillas of Destiny regained the tag team titles. Night two saw Ibushi defeating Jay White in the main event, and then Takahashi regained the junior heavyweight title, defeating Ishimori. The next day, I believe Jay White said he was quitting New Japan after New Year's Dash was done. And that was kind of a question of, is that real storyline, all that stuff. He's still there. So that was obviously storyline. New Japan said they were set to announce a US TV deal soon. The New Japan Cup was announced for March. Leo Rush made his debut for New Japan Strong. Sakura Genesis was announced for April. El Phantasmo and Ishimori became the new junior tag team champions following a title match at Road to New Beginning. And then John Moxley appeared on New Japan Strong and attacked Kenta. Kenta had earned the title shot during Wrestle Kingdom, and we learned that that match was going to be happening on Strong rather soon. So I'll give this to you because, again, you're one of our lead Japan experts. So what stuck out to you about that? I mean, the unification thing was pretty big at the time. Obviously, things didn't – I don't know if it turned out the way they would have hoped, but this kind of really kicked off a – it seems like – again, you'd be the best person to say this – seemed like kind of a lackluster year for New Japan in a lot of ways. I think the travel obviously is restrictions, and the restrictions there in that country. You know, just it seems to be they out of any wrestling company, they seem to be the one that really needs to get on the other side of this pandemic like as soon as possible.
1,000%. And I think the pandemic has hurt, in terms of what talent they can bring in, it's really hurt their junior heavyweight division. That's where they would bring in guys like Bandido or Dragon Lee, guys like that that would help kind of fill out the undercards on some of these shows. But the other thing is that you mentioned it with their US TV deal, which ended up being with the Roku channel. I mean, that's one of those things where they have just always had a fundamental misunderstanding of the United States market and how to break into it. And maybe, I think they had an offer from Vice to be on Vice TV, which is not like some huge cable network here, but it's a bigger deal than showing reruns on the Roku channel. And maybe if you're, you know, if you are in the business in Japan, you don't understand that, and you think that the Roku channel is the place to be. But anyway, yeah. So they had a rough year. They're playing to, you know, half houses and one third houses because of COVID restrictions in Japan. I guess they're kind of moving past that now. Japan, I think, is the most vaccinated of the G7 countries now. They're like over 75% vaccinated. So they're definitely moving to the other side of this. But the other thing, they have a fundamental misunderstanding of the law of supply and demand. And they are exhibiting that with running three Wrestle Kingdom shows in 2022 and just running a million shows this year, even though they have not had access to their entire roster because of travel restrictions and things like that. And so they end up a lot of shows in 2021 in front of 200 people at Corican Hall, which is just like, it's depressing. The fans aren't allowed to make noise. So you have a lot of very tired wrestlers who are beat up, wrestling in front of quiet, small crowds. So it was a very rough year for New Japan. And I would like to squeeze in my Jay White hot take here.
Yes.
Jay White is the modern Ric Flair. And that's one of those things where if you say that, like, old timers are going to get pissed off. But Jay White is Ric Flair and for this generation. He is so freaking good. He's this generation's Ric Flair in that he's like the perfect blank canvas for a babyface to do all their moves on. And he just sells and sells the way a good heel sells. And he's so good. That's my Jay White hot take, is Jay White is this generation's Ric Flair.
I like it. If you agree with him, you let him know on Twitter. We'll give you that information in just a minute. You can yell, or you can go on the board where none of us will watch it or see it.
Yeah, that's good.
Just kidding. We look at the board sometimes. Anyway, Ring of Honor.
I don't.
Yeah, good for you. I think that's probably why you have all your hair. Mm-hmm. And a good head, good head of hair it is. I will tell you guys that. I will.
Tanahashi told me that. I met Tanahashi, and the first thing he said to me is, "Whoa, nice hair."
Really?
Yes.
No kidding. Did he make you pay for a photo?
He did.
Oh, yes. He did. So he's consistent.
Yes.
He's consistent. That's great. That's great. Ring of Honor, we'll just kind of go over this real quick. Tracy Williams, Brian Johnson, now it's like a re-signs with a lot of talent at the beginning of the year. We saw how that turned out. Tracy Williams, Brian Johnson, Sumi Sakai, Bateman, Amy Rose, Bandido, Mark Haskins, and the Bouncers all re-upped with ROH. Dalton Castle was a free agent and was evaluating his options, eventually obviously re-signing with the company. And kind of the biggest news out of this is Ring of Honor and Mari Skrull mutually deciding to part ways. This finally came out. This was stemming from the summer of 2020, the speaking out movement that took place on social media. And there was obviously a story about him with an underage girl, which he admitted to in two very awkward statements. They're released within, you know, a couple hours of each other. It was very strange. He was going to appear at New Japan Strong. These are a few things we'll talk about later this year, but, you know, he basically was put on ice by Ring of Honor, and they were doing all these, they said they were doing an investigation. It was kind of a blanket statement. They were going to do an investigation on essentially anyone that had been accused of something in relation to speaking out. And then they never announced anything on it. They never said what they were doing, what conclusions they had found. I think some people asked him, they said, you know, probably the investigation is going to take place within a few weeks. It was unclear whether Sinclair, their ownership was doing it, or if they were doing it, how it was being handled. I believe it was Jay Lethal was mentioned. Dan Maff, I think, was accused of something as well. And nothing ever happened with it. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, it was like, okay, they're going to mutually decide to part ways. And Skrull, you know, he was, you know, people obviously know who he is if they're listening to this, right? I mean, he was a popular name in the Indies, probably, you know, could have been in AEW, and he had the cards played right before any of this happened. Obviously was on Being the Elite and all this stuff, and probably would end up in AEW at some point had this all not happened. And then he was basically, you know, he signed with Ring of Honor, was going to be I'm the head of their booking team, but basically a key member of that team. And really seemed to be getting this kind of this interesting role. And then in the span of last summer, everything fell apart and they finally decided to part ways. And, you know, as we'll talk about later in the year, he eventually resurfaced a couple times, but was not wanted. Zanz, his future is kind of really, really in doubt. And I mean, bad decisions, but I mean, there's not a good year in 2020 for him. And then obviously that kind of kicked off here, kept going in 2021.
Yeah. Bad time to be Marty Skrull. New Japan bringing him in for, he was at a set of Strong tapings, and I don't know if they filmed anything. I was talking about this with somebody the other day and trying to remember whether or not they filmed anything. This is when they were filming Strong in front of no fans.
Right.
He was definitely at a taping. And then it was just a question of, I don't remember if they've filmed anything with him or not. And I probably shouldn't speculate on that. But yeah, Marty Skrull was a guy who was on at BTE, as you mentioned. And he was on the All In pay-per-view that became the pilot for AEW, and yep, 1,000% would have ended up there at some point, and didn't. And you would think that with the accusations that are out there against him, that would be the end of his career. And it's just like the guy keeps popping up,
trying to.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember the and yeah, we'll talk about that when we actually hit the month. But yeah, he had appeared at a Strong taping, and I remember there was a woman who had tweeted some stuff that, you know, there were some talents up there upset because they didn't know he was going to appear. There were some crew members or whatever. I guess they're kind of like, you know, what is this guy doing here?
Right.
And then I think they used him. I think they filmed an angle with him, and it was kind of like a main event angle. And obviously they never used it, and they'd come out and make a statement like, you know, we're not using him anymore. And it's interesting how these groups. And we talked about this in our chat with this whole thing with Bandido and not Travis Liger. Oh my God, what is the
Banks?
Travis Banks? Yeah, Travis Liger. I don't know why I came off that. Travis Liger. I'm just kind of making up names.
Well, there's the guy like Ligero.
That's who I'm thinking. Because he was. Yeah, right. Because he was part of that thing. In NXT UK as well when they was accused. Yeah. And you know I guess. From a promotion standpoint, at this point, there's so many talents and so many people out there looking for work. It's like, why bring someone in that you think it's the people aren't going to be cool with it, right?
Right.
And it didn't help that, you know, Skrull, he never, you know, he had those two awful just statements. He hasn't done an on-camera interview to try to explain himself. I think he's tried, and it's just people are like, I'm good, right? And I think once that's kind of there, you're not going to get a back because there's no, you know, no contrition. It's like one of these things where you have like the NXT UK guys, like some of those people that are accused are still there working. And there was never anything announced about that. There was nothing to exonerate them. It's kind of like, it's almost like they're like, well, fans, you make your own decision of what you want to do here, but we're going to keep having this person work. And it's like, that's very odd, you know?
Yes.
It's just like, yeah, it's just this whole thing was handled by these groups. And granted, there is some right to privacy when you're doing an investigation of an employee or independent contract or whatever, but there's still like, you know, it's such a, everything that talents are so public facing, that you can't have this happen and then just say you're doing an investigation and then not follow up. I just think that's just a real shitty way to do things. And regardless, yeah, kind of a long conversation about this whole thing. But yeah, this was Skrull is who knows, man? Who knows?
And it's the weird thing too, where more so than you know, just the normal entertainment business, like there is that thing where you're not just investing in Marty Skrull's character if he's on a TV show. It's like you're half-ass investing in Marty Skrull, the human being, too. Like if you're a fan, I'm talking about, you know, if you're a fan and choosing, you know, whose merch you buy and all that stuff. It's like it's that weird hybrid thing with wrestling where it's not just a character on a TV show. It's also a human being that you're supporting. And so like that aspect of it where you're asking fans to, as you know, the way that you put it with some of the NXT UK guys where they're like, well, you decide. It's well, I don't want this in my entertainment. Yeah. Like I don't want to have to make an ethical or moral decision when I'm just trying to watch TV, you know, like
it's very much an endorsement business when it comes to, especially on the indies, like fans. I think we're kind of getting to it. It's like you're buying a shirt, you're buying this, like getting a picture with them event, you're endorsing them because you're giving them money based on whatever, you know? Yeah, it's a very strange business. Let's go over this last section to wrap things up here. Again, this is just kind of a mix of everything. So Leo Rush winning the MLW middleweight title at Kings of Coliseum. Los Parks won the MLW tag team titles thanks to that dastardly, filthy Tom Lawler as he turned on the Von Erichs as part of that long angle. We learned that the Brian Pillman episode was going to kick off the new season of Dark Side of the Ring. Young Rock, everyone's favorite show. We learned it was going to debut in February on NBC and quite the recaps to come in Wrestling Observer Radio after that. Oh, yeah. We learned that John Moxley was going to be writing a book, which just came out a couple weeks ago. CM Punk announced that he was going to be on this new star show called Heels, and it was going to be a beginning of obviously a very newsworthy year for CM Punk. Renee Paquette announced she was going to move her podcast to Colin Cowherd's new network, The Volume. Disney Channel announced they were picking up a Blue Demon Jr. superhero comedy series, which I did not remember at all. I could not. I could be making this up completely, but I saw the headline and the post that we did on our website. And then Arn Anderson, go over our COVID list. And again, this is when all these things were getting reported at the time. Arn Anderson, Michelle McCool, Drew McIntyre, who was then WWE champion, Nick Jackson, Chris Jericho, Mystico, Mick Foley, and Mia Yim, all came forward that they had got COVID-19. Thoughts on any of that?
Let's see. Let me just take a moment to put over Renee Paquette, who definitely doesn't need anyone to put her over. But I talked to an indie promoter who brought her in for like an autograph signing, and he was like, "The person you see on camera is the same person that I deal with off camera. She has time for everyone. She's super professional and she's great." And it's nice to see good things happen to good people. Renee wrote her cookbook this year. You mentioned she got her podcast on Colin Cowherd's network. So good year for her. And I'm trying to remember what else was at the beginning of. There was another thing that I wanted to mention, but I can't. What was it? Could you run through that list one more time?
Sure. It was the MLW title changes, Brian Pillman episode, Dark Side, Young Rock. Yeah. Yeah. John Moxley, CM Punk on Heels. And then I think, do you want to go into details about Blue Demon Jr., the superhero comedy?
You know, I really COVID don't list? Have a whole lot of Blue Demon animated series thoughts. No, I don't. But obviously, yeah, that CM Punk. What was his character? Ricky Rabies on Stars?
Yes,
That ended up, kind of opening the door to... Well, it was one of many things that kind of opened the portal for him to return to wrestling. So, big deal there.
Have you seen that show?
I have not.
I haven't either. I've heard it, like, it was... I heard people watched it, liked it, and I listened to a Ringer podcast, Prestige TV, and it kind of covers, you know, random episodes or full seasons. I was kind of scrolling through the archives because I was looking for something specific that they talked about. And I saw they actually talked about, it was like, you know, season finale of Heels. Mm-hmm. And so they were kind of interested in it. And, you know, Stars obviously isn't like a big network or anything like that. But yeah, I guess I think the whole season is for free right now on YouTube, if I remember right. And they had a second season. So it must be like enough of a hit for them where they're like, we're going to do more of this.
Oh, I will check it out. I didn't know that they were for free on YouTube. The way I work is that I mentioned I had kind of half-assed had a previous life as a TV reviewer. If I still get screeners for stuff. If somebody sends me something for free, I will watch it. But with as much wrestling as there is, like I don't really have, and as much Frasier and Cheers as I watch, like I don't have time. I don't have time to go watch Heels. So
yeah,
I will check it out though.
What's the what's the last show or show you're watching right now that has got your interest?
I've seen the first two episodes of the Dexter reboot.
Oh, me too. Me too.
I'm intrigued. Intrigued. I have two more that I can work through there. But that was a show that did not end its first run very well. No. And had a lot of hit and miss seasons. But the way that they've reintroduced the character and kind of the story that they're telling, I'm intrigued and I'm interested to see how that plays out.
The first four seasons were awesome. They had the same, I think the reason for that, actually I do know the reason for that was definitely that they had the same, essentially the same creative team, same showrunner, kind of the same vision for those first mm-hmm. four seasons, which mm-hmm. I would highly recommend again on Showtime. The seasons, I was actually kind of thinking about this the other day. So to me, season four, which was the Trinity Killer. Yeah. The Trinity, that is up there of like one of my favorite seasons of TV that I've ever seen. Just the way they kind of weave that storyline through is really good. I would go, the first season is my second favorite, then the second one, and then the third. That's how I would go. Third was the Jimmy Smits season. It was kind of like, I think that was the third one.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah. So the Jimmy Smith, it was kind of like they're like, huh, how do we have 20 episodes in the end of the belt. How do we make this work with a serial killer in Miami and end up giving a friend? And it all made sense. But from there, so I've done a rewatch of the first five seasons. I'm in the, and my wife had never seen him before. And so she really mm-hmm. kind of like the first four, okay. And then five, she started kind of dip out. We just started the Colin Hanks, Edward James, almost kind of more religion based season.
Meh.
And the rest. And then it was kind of like the girlfriends and all that. Yeah.
Yeah. Season seven, I will stand by. I think that's the next to last season of the original run.
Yep.
It's like, I'll stand by that one. That was good. But yeah, a lot of hit and miss towards the end there.
Episode five, or sorry, the first episode of season five, which is the post death it's weird. It's like, I know it's spoil it, but right. It's like, a post death, kind of thing. I will tell you, it's the most ridiculous episode of TV I've seen in quite some time. So this person died and the parents come into town and it's like, the parents have no idea this person has died. And they're kind of like, we're going to have a funeral in 2 days. And it's like, hold on. So anyone that's been to a funeral knows that it doesn't come together in 2 days of getting like all these family, and you don't tell someone's parents, hey, we already made these arrangements and it's all set. It's going to be in 2 days, whether or not you can, like, it doesn't make any logical sense. That's not how funerals work. That's not how, like, it's not how any of this works. It's so
society. Yeah.
Oh my God. It is so just, yeah, I watch it. I remember not thinking that back in the day, but again, watching it with fresh eyes, it's like, hold on. It's just, I don't know, plot holes like this. Sure. Yeah. So Dexter, I think, I agree. The first two are promising. It is weird not seeing, a lot, it like not being in the same environment. You're kind of, you know, I'm so used to that Miami environment and just that kind of the thing we got all kind of used to. So yeah, we'll see if we get a Matsuka appearance or something this season. Yeah. That would be the ice cream on the cake.
I think they've spent most of their budget just like buying songs. Like there's like a Rolling Stones song. It's like all this music that you know costs a ton of money to clear. It's like, well, they've spent $14 shooting it like in a snowbank somewhere or in front of a green screen, and so they just took the entire budget for the show this year and put it into buying songs.
Yeah,
it's interesting.
Yeah, not a lot of named characters, actors on this for sure. Right. Yeah, so I think that that wraps up January. And again, there's definitely some things that we missed along the way, but you know, certainly let us know on Twitter or anything, maybe things that stood out to you during the month. Certainly love to hear. Yeah, and we'll add those in. Ethan, before I let you go, give the chance to you to plug where people can find you on social media. Obviously, they can read your work on WrestlingObserver.com, but plug the podcast and social, and the floor is yours.
All right, so I'm at Ethan Renner, E-T-H-A-N-R-E-N-N-E-R on Twitter, and my podcast is the Wrestling Life Podcast. I co-host with my brother Liam. We've done the show for 7 years. Our Twitter handle is TWL_podcast. Liam does all the tweeting over there. Or you can find us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, YouTube, whatever. So The Wrestling Life is the podcast, and I'm at Ethan Renner on social.
Good stuff. Yeah, he's you've been a great addition to the website. Been here for quite some time. I'm glad that you've worked your way into an editor role. And yeah, looking forward to more from you in the years ahead. And hopefully one day, as I, again, incorrectly point out at the beginning of the episode, a spinoff of Frasier Observer Radio. You can just dedicate yourself just to that one mission. I think it'd be a huge hit.
Can I get one more hot take in here before we go real quick?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
If you have an Observer Hall of Fame vote this year, vote for Trish Stratus. Like, representation is important, and there's an entire generation of women that became pro wrestlers because of Trish Stratus. And as far as positive impact on the business, very few people will historically have the legacy that she had. I think every year that goes by, her case gets stronger, and she dropped year over year in the Observer Hall of Fame balloting. So I would strongly make the case for Trish Stratus to go into the Observer Hall of Fame this year.
You're a big proponent of women's wrestling, a big mega fan of Sasha Banks, I will say. And do you, one last prediction from you.
Sure.
Do you think we will see Sasha Banks versus Trish Stratus in 2022 in a WWE squared circle?
I believe so. I think where there's smoke, there's fire. And Scoop, I've talked to both of them about this match, and they both want the match. So it's going to happen. Yeah.
All right. You heard it here first. Ethan Renner, thanks so much for stopping by.
Thanks for having me, Josh.
All right. Big thanks to Ethan Renner for stopping by and spending the time. That was our first conversation we actually have ever had. We've worked together in this website for years. It's interesting. There's people, and this is the way that kind of that a lot of quote unquote newsrooms work is you talk via Slack, you meet via Slack or other means, email, something like that, and you may never meet any of these people. That was the first time I'd ever talked to Ethan before. And it's, pretty crazy how that works these days. But yeah, so Ethan Renner, big thanks to him for stopping by. I hope you guys enjoyed that. Next week will be February. It looks like Monday will be the recording date for that. And we'll get that squared away for Thanksgiving begins. And then after the holiday, we will start getting into MMA, also March. And we'll just keep rolling on these and do a couple a week till we get caught up. So since I recorded that, 8 releases in WWE coming on Thursday night. And it's weird how they're doing these. You know, they just released 18 people 3 weeks ago or 2 weeks ago, rather. So what changed? Like, why not just cut everyone at once if you're going to do that? You know, the reasons here's my opinion on this, and take this for what it will. You know, I know that the sexy thing, kind of the newsworthy thing, is they're preparing for a sale. So trying to cut all this talent that they can. You know, they may be trying to pare down the payroll, but also, you know, what is the reason for how they're doing these cuts as they are? It doesn't really make much sense, especially if they're just coming a couple weeks apart. It seems kind of odd. I think what's happening, you know, part of that is I think any company tries to be more fiscally responsible. They are moving into a new facility at the end of next year. They're leasing instead of owning. I thought that was kind of interesting, you know, why they're leaving their owned property and moving into a new one. And they own a couple different ones and they lease one now. And so they're moving into this at the end of 2022 is the plan right now. So do you move into a lease situation because it could be, you know, again, if you sell, does that make it easier to move or just that, you know, who knows in those situations. But I don't think these moves are being made strictly because of the because of an impending sale or trying to prep for one. I think they're at the point, they're under essentially, you know, Vince is still there, but you have Nikon, and Nikon is it's kind of a brand new organization from the top down in a lot of ways. And I think what they're trying to do is different. And I think they're still trying to catch up with their vision and have the roster be more of what they want it to be. And it kind of begs the question, how big does a pro wrestling roster like WWE or AEW, how big do they actually need to be to put on a really good product? You know, do they need, is it 50? Is it 60? Is it 100? What do you really need for the amount of hours that you're trying to figure out? And granted, they use a lot of the same people week after week, but is that good? But I don't know. And I think that's a question that we'll see a lot more, because these cuts are definitely not done. There's talents there that you and I know right now are kind of like, why is X still there? It's kind of odd. So I think things are going to definitely get worse. But the way they're doing them is kind of really, really bad, really shitty. You know, just cut everyone at once if you're going to do that. And these waves, you know, think of you're somebody there that you think you might be on the bubble. What are you thinking right now? It's the holiday season. I don't know. It's just kind of weird and terrible how they're doing it. But, you know, I mean, they're still making a ton of money. They're still going to be around, still going to be a destination. And it's just, this is a very strange, strange year for WWE. Strange couple of years, really, for how they're doing this. As we talked about, it's weird because we talked with Bill Behrens last week on a podcast that got some good reviews. So I'm very happy for that. About how these talents navigate this new industry, because there's a flood of talent. And I think the inclination is that these talents are going to get work no matter what. It's possible, but they may not be getting the money that they think that they deserve. And so if a wrestler goes out, I had this explained to me a few weeks ago that, you know, if a wrestler is like, look, I was in WWE, I was on Raw, featured 205 Live, whatever, you know, just an example. And I'm like, I think I'm worth $1,000 in appearance plus travel, plus hotel. A lot of indie promoters, and actually most, are still hurting from the last year, basically from the pandemic, and not being able to run shows. And if they're looking at it, they're like, oh, I can bring in wrestler X. Is that going to generate me more than, $1,500 would in travel and appearance fee and all that? Is that going to put me over the top? Some promoters may have that money. You look at some of these loaded up shows in across the country, and others won't. But again, when you have, I think it's over 100 talents have been released this year alone. I think that might be the total. Plus the ROH group, there is a flood. So not everybody is going to find homes where they want, and not everybody is going to get the money they want, because again, it's a very competitive market. If you're a wrestler, you're like, look, I think I'm very similar to wrestler X, Y, and Z. Maybe my booking rate is, I don't know, say $500 plus travel, or so, you know, it's those strategic moves of how to, and that's what I find really fascinating. And how talents are going to kind of navigate this. And we'll, you know, a year from now, we'll know a lot more about how things went. We'll be able to look at some of these wrestlers and be like, okay, they went here, they went here, they went here. I think Impact can definitely step up and sign some. AEW could. I think there's AEW, they have to look at it kind of like this of like, what, at this point, it's like, what does my optimal roster look like? And do they have it now? They're pretty close, I think. I mean, there's some of these where it's a fantasy team where it's like, okay, I can go get Keith Lee. I can go get Bray Wyatt. I can go get, Ember Moon. I can go get wrestler. I can go get whoever I want. But do you have enough? You have enough TV time for them? Do you have enough ideas for them? What about everyone else on the roster? I think it's around 150 wrestlers. So then you're like, huh? You have to get in that mindset of, would I rather have these five on the outside, or would I rather keep these five on the inside that I may not have ideas for or something like that? I don't know. I think it's that's kind of the interesting thing where every person that they bring in, there is a person that is going to lose some time somewhere. That's inevitable. We've seen that happen already. That's kind of how I'm worrying about this. So I think the assumption is that, you know, AEW is going to take a ton of these people. I don't know. I mean, they have a lot already. And it's, to me, it's what's your ideal roster? And they can do whatever they want now. They can make their ideal roster, but they're going to have to make some cuts to do it. And they haven't really done that yet. And that's what I think will be fascinating is when you start seeing some of these talents, either their contracts not get renewed, or if you get a case of they're like, look, we're going to make some cuts because we need to pare things down a bit. It's we haven't really hit that mark with them yet. And I'm really interested to see what happens when they do, because it's going to come at some point. It's inevitable, but we'll see. And I think about, yeah, I think about guys like Brian Cage. So I know a lot of people don't like him for whatever reason, but he was someone that got brought in, well, I think it was about a year ago in that casino ladder match, and had been Impact champion, really impressive look, athletic. And he's, you know, he had a world title match against John Moxley. He won that casino ladder match. I believe that's what it was. And he had the thing with Team Taz, but really hasn't been used a lot. And it's just, he's kind of one of those guys. Some reason he and Lance Archer, I think a lot about, and Lance Archer's hurt right now, that they kind of, it's stops and starts and you don't really see them a lot. And so I wonder about those two guys. My prediction, in the, Fight Game Media Facebook group, which we've talked about here with Paul Fontaine, is that I think the first talent that's going to leave or try to get out is going to be Brian Cage. I have that feeling. He's healthy. He's wrestling a lot of other places, but they're really not using him in AEW. So it's kind of like, is there something else going on behind the scenes? Is it a, some issue with COVID stuff? We've heard nothing about like vaccine mandates or anything like that. Is there something going on there? I don't know. It's odd. So again, you kind of look at what your roster construction is. They're like, look, we'll release him, and that allows us to bring in a Keith Lee, who we'd rather have instead. Those are the decisions that they have to make. I don't know if they're going to, but at some point that's going to happen. And, you know, Ring of Honor, that we talked about that before, how that hurts things. MLW is, until they get some a real TV deal, it's hard to consider them a major player. You know, I think ROH is probably, if they do come back, that's going to move. They're going to move into that model like MLW has, maybe a couple contracted guys like a Jacob Fatu, Hammerstone, a few pillars they can kind of build around, but the wrestlers are going to be people they bring in for a couple tapings. They have an idea for, you know, 6 months or so, and they just kind of rotate in and rotate out. So, Impact again, I think Impact, here's the other issue too, and sorry if I'm rambling. These are just kind of things I think about with all this stuff. These other groups really don't tour, and that's how you get some revenue and get some more exposure and so on. Obviously TV is the best exposure, what have you, but they don't tour at all. So that takes away a revenue avenue. I know MLW does, a few shows a year, which is good, but they're not every month doing a new set of TV tapings and traveling somewhere. It is better than Impact. Impact is basically just Vegas and Nashville right now. But they're not like, okay, we're going to do an Impact tour of 12 cities over 12 months or something like that. You know, it's they haven't really got back to that yet. And what type of budget they have? Can they bring in some of these talents? They're not working in front of like huge houses, either Vegas or Nashville. So, that's, to me, it's kind of until they get to that point of like somebody has to step in. And I was listening to John Alba last night for a few. Oh no, it was I was listening to John Alba's show kind of after the cuts, and then Sean Ross Sapp as well. Just kind of listening to see what other people are talking about. And it was Sean that brought up the idea of could Jeff Jarrett get back in the mix and perhaps perhaps start a third group. You know, that's a possibility. You never know. There's so many different things that could happen. I think 2022 is going to be pretty crazy as well. But the industry at this point really needs a strong number three that has some money and has good creative and may make this a three-horse race in a lot of ways. There's a ton of talent. It's just a question of getting the right creative, getting the right money, and obviously getting exposure. Can't just be a YouTube show. It's got to be something a little bit bigger, like a real TV network, if you can do it. And look, pro wrestling is hurting in those aspects. I think with a number three, who knows? Is the industry hot right now? I think it's hot for two groups. But for the rest of the industry, they're still kind of still trying to figure it out. Pandemic was tough on a lot of people, and it's very interesting times ahead, and that's why we're doing so much time looking back. So I'm going to let you guys go. Big thanks for listening. Big thanks to Ethan Renner. Thanks to all of you for listening to January as part of the 2021 year in review. You have a lot of choices in your podcast day, and I greatly appreciate the time you spend with me or any of our fine podcast hosts on WrestlingObserver.com. Until next week, when we hit up February, insert catchphrase here.